of the new.
And welcome to
the Bicheri of History.
Okay, do you
want some cheese?
Now that we've insulted the entire French part of our... Now that we've insulted the entire French portion of our audience, welcome to the Bicheri of History, week 5. Can you believe that?
I cannot. This is fantastic.
This week, Allison and I both accidentally researched French people. So we were very excited. We decided we were going to start the program in French today.
You're welcome.
So today I'm going to be talking about Sydney Gabrielle Collette.
And I am going to be talking about Julie Jobby. So France just has some really kick-ass women in their history.
France is full of badass bitches. It took almost everything I had not to do Joan of Arc this week. I will do Joan of Arc in the future because there's just like all of this history that she has that mm-hmm. no one really knows about. They just know about her burning as a martyr, and she is such a badass bitch.
I have a fantastic book about her that I got for $1 at the last bookstore in Los Angeles. It's amazing.
Okay, so first of all, I have not been to that bookstore yet, and I cannot wait to go. I've been here for like a year.
Let's do it.
Let's go. Second of all, can I borrow that book?
Yes.
Fantastic. Before I start talking about Sydney Gabrielle Collette, or Collette for short, I really just want to say that there's no way I could do this woman justice in the amount of time that I have for her. Over the course of this week, as I've been researching, I just had to keep adding pages and pages of notes and ripping out and rewriting things because I kept finding new details or extra details or new events that I had to put between other events because this woman lived her life at a constant 11. She didn't do anything, just like you.
That's
exactly.
My personal motto.
Exactly, right.
One of my personal mottos.
So I'm going to do my best.
All right.
And I will just say, please, dear audience, as with all of our women, once you're done listening to this podcast, go look her up because she is an amazing woman.
All right. Hit me.
So she's born January 28th, 1873 in the French village of Saint-Severin-Poussay. I'm not sure. Right. Exactly. To a father who was a retired army captain turned tax collector and a mother who grew up amongst artists and political radicals in Belgium. From a very young age, she was very precocious, very rambunctious, insisted on going by her last name, Collette, which was almost exclusively something that was done only for boys. Girls were almost always referred to by their first name and only by their first name or by their full name. Really, only boys were on that familiar level of calling each other by a last name. It's like
a Mulder and Scully kind of a thing.
Exactly. And at the age of 20, which is super young, she marries this man named Henri Gautier Villard, or Henri, I'm imagining. And 1893. Let's just say that he wasn't the greatest man in France. He was a bit of a philanderer. He was a bit of a gambler. It didn't take long for him to realize what he had on his hands in Colette. And he found out that she was an amazing storyteller. So he began locking her in her room and forcing her to write. And what she came up with was this series of books.
Oh my god!
As an extra source of income, he forces her to write these books. And she comes up between 1900 and 1903, every single year, that's 4 years, she publishes a book in the Claudine series. Her husband, who does the publishing, publishes them under his name.
Damn it.
And they're a runaway hit. They make Claudine soap, Claudine perfume, Claudine cigars, cigarettes. They even make a stage play. In 1906, Collette gets tired of Henri's ways, especially once they got famous. He got even worse. He got completely unbearable. And so she leaves him in 1906. Unfortunately, because he published them and he held the copyright, she was completely severed from any and all royalties that came from the Claudine series. So ever the pragmatist, she figures her way onto the stage and she becomes an actor, basically vaudeville, like musical theater actor. And she gets herself into the community. She gets involved with a divorcee named the Marquis de Balbouf, known as short for Missy. This is a woman. She gets involved publicly with a woman. And in 1906, she has this moment that sets literally the world on fire when she exposes a breast on stage in Paris, later recreating the exposed breasts in a picture, which made its way around the world. You can talk to people from this time, and I found a lot of sources when I was doing my research that talk about personal experiences and remembrances from the breast picture.
Wow.
It caused that much of a scandal.
Many, what, 100 years before Janet Jackson?
Yeah, this is 1906, at least. Needless to say, Colette is catapulted to instant notoriety. Fame, infamy, depending on which way you want to take it. A year later, not really even a year later, January 3rd, 1907, Missy joins Colette in a new stage play at the Moulin Rouge, in which there's a 15-minute makeout session that nearly incites a riot.
Between the two of them?
The kissing scene? Yeah, between the two of them.
Whoa!
Yeah. So the show is shut down, the scene is banned by the Paris police commissioner, and Missy and Colette are basically forced to publicly break up because it's no longer safe for them to be together in public. So she stays writing, she starts writing even more. I mean, she ends up, by the end of her life, I could sit here and talk about her books, but between 1900 and 1954, when she dies, she writes 29 books.
Holy goodness.
After she and Missy break up, she finally gets her divorce from Willie, and she gets remarried to Henri de Juvenal, who is the editor-in-chief of a newspaper called Le Matin, and she becomes a reporter for him, basically, writing on women's issues, sexuality, basically the women's topics of the day. And many historians talk about her writing splitting into two works at this point, because around 1920, when she gets married in 1912, she has a daughter in 1913, and then in 1920 she comes out with one of her most well-known books, Cherie. And it's part of this two veins that her writing takes. One is slightly depraved post-war generation vein, which is Cherie, which comes out in 1920. And the other one is a look back on the countryside of her enchanted childhood and away from the pleasures and delusions of shallow love affairs. And an example of that is a book called Les Maisons de Claudine, or it's called in English, The House of My Mother. She gets another divorce in 1934 and then remarries again in 1935. That same year, she's made a member of the Belgian Royal Academy, and then she just keeps writing. She continues writing for the rest of her life. In 1944, she publishes her most well-known work, Gigi, won the Best Academy,
Best Picture.
Best Picture Award at the Academy Awards. That movie came out in 1958. The book was written in 1944.
This is crazy!
So she writes Gigi, 1944, worldwide fame at this point. In 1945, she's elected first seat in the French Académie Goncourt, which is a French society that only has 12 members. It sounds so much like aspiring to me. They refer to the 12 seats of the French Academy, and you get elected to a seat, and they refer to you as being elected to the first seat, or the second seat, or the fifth seat.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe.
00 first seat.
001. In 1953, she's made a Grand Officer of the Legion of Honor, which is basically like being knighted by the Queen of England, but for France.
Nice.
I have to say that becoming Grand Officer Legion of Honor, being elected to the French Academy Goncourt, and becoming a member of the Belgian Royal Academy were all incredibly rare things to happen to women in France, or really anywhere at this time in history.
She got all three. Triple threat.
And then when she passed away in 1954, she was given a state funeral in France.
Wow.
Thousands upon thousands showed up to line the route and to view her lying in state. I forgot to mention that in 1948, she was nominated for a Nobel Prize in Literature as well.
Holy crap! Oh yeah, sorry, just let that one slide. That's amazing.
So her life, I'm leaving a lot out. just because I can't do her justice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the biggest badass bitches I've ever researched, easily.
She's incredible. So, I just want to see the movie of her being locked in her room and being forced to write.
No, her story would be an HBO miniseries.
Oh, for sure. Showtime 100%, miniseries. 100%.
Because, like, Game of Thrones, it's too much for
one
movie.
Can we get Frances McDormand on the phone?
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Either her or Helen Mirren.
I guess she's younger, though. Oh my gosh, can they just play her at different points
yes.
in her life? Oh! And so we can have Rooney Mara when she's
yes.
young. I know. I'm ready for this. I'm so ready. Sign me up.
I'm here. I'm here for this.
I will donate to that Kickstarter so fast. So now onto my French lady,
please.
I suppose, Julie Daubigny.
I'm excited for this one. You tell me a little bit.
Yeah, it's so interesting also that mm-hmm. we both picked, well, I guess bisexual people.
We did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because mine is bisexual as well. So Julie Daubigny, she was a 17th century bisexual French opera singer and fencing master who killed or wounded at least 10 men in life or death duels, performed nightly in the Paris Opera, and her life is just crazy ridiculous. Crazy ridiculous.
Hold on 1 second. Let me pick my jaw up off the floor.
So because she was around in the 17th century in France, mm-hmm. a lot of her life story, I mean, we know she existed. We know she performed at the Paris Opera. We know some facts about her life, but a lot of the stories surrounding her are a little bit mystical, a little bit apocryphal. Mm-hmm. So I'll walk you through what kind of we know and what we believe to be true.
Please.
So when she was born, her father actually was one of the trainers for the king's squires.
Okay.
And he basically said, oh, well, you're a girl. It doesn't matter. I'll train you just like the rest of the squires. So she was trained in fencing and horseback riding and all manner of squire training from a very young age. And kind of took that power to heart and said, listen up. I am gonna live my life however I want to live it. You can do whatever you want. So when she was in her teenage years, mm-hmm. she decided that she was gonna have an affair with her father's boss.
Oh.
Just to, you know, cause some trouble.
The king?
No, not the king.
Oh.
I would have said the king. The man that her father reported to, then reported to the king, or who reported to this guy, who reported to the king. So not the king, but...
I was about to say...
But the man who was in charge of overseeing her father.
Right.
And his training of the squires. This affair lasted a little bit of time until the man she was having an affair with kind of said, you know what? I cannot really handle you anymore. You're too much. So I am going to marry you off. So he basically helped her father get her married to another man who then promptly left the country.
Oh, God.
to go and work in... some of the French colonies abroad, and Julie was supposed to go with him and simply said, hell no, I'm not leaving France. I'm good here. Thanks, but no thanks. So then she made her way through the French countryside and met up with another fencing teacher, learned more about the art of fencing from him, and then made her way to Paris, where she started sword fighting in the streets to make money. So she would, basically, she became a street performer and would start challenging people to duels and beat them and take all their money because people would bet on her. Mm-hmm. And so some people, at this point, she was dressing as a man.
Right.
But never hiding her sex, like, oh, I'm pretending to be a man. She just was wearing pants, essentially.
A woman
in man's clothing. And so at one of these duels, people started yelling and saying, you have to be a man because you're winning all these duels. You're beating all these men. You are dressed in men's clothes. You are a man. So she decided to expose her breasts to the crowd and said, judge for yourself. She then also would sing to draw the crowds to her and then say, hey, let's have a duel. So at one point, someone from the Paris Opera, so we believe she may also have auditioned for the Paris Opera. Mm. There's many versions, but eventually she made her way and joined the Paris Opera, where she had affairs with most of the actors and actresses in the Paris Opera, played many, many leading roles, including one opera that was written specifically for her, which was the first opera to be written for a woman who was not a soprano in the Paris Opera. And at one point, as actors do after a show, everyone was maybe a little tipsy, having too much fun, and an actor in the show was kind of bothering one of the other actresses, hitting on her and mm-hmm. wasn't really getting
it. Being a douche.
Being a douche. Wasn't really getting a yes, but kept pursuing.
Right.
And so Julie said, you need to stop. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not cool with this. And he said, no, kept on doing it. So she said, okay. Goes out in the street, hides on the street so that this actor, while he's on his way home, she jumps out, challenges him to a duel for honor, beats him, takes his pocket watch and his wallet. And then the next day he shows up at the theater all beat up, all covered in bruises. And everyone is like, oh my gosh, what happened? And he goes, oh, three black men jumped me in the street and robbed me. So she pulls out his pocket watch from her own pocket and says, what a liar you are. Here's your pocket watch that I stole from you when I beat you in a duel one-on-one by myself.
Louise.
So she also was bisexual and had many affairs with both men and women. And at one point she was having an affair with a young girl who, when her parents found out, sent this young woman off to a convent.
Get thee to a nunnery.
Exactly. So Julie says, nah, I will see that.
We were having fun.
Dresses up as a nun and takes the holy orders to sneak into the convent.
Yes.
And burns it to the ground. Now also, it is speculated that a nun, an older nun had recently died of natural causes. And so she may have robbed the grave of this nun's body, put it in her lover's bed, and then set fire to the convent. So when they ran away, they found this the bones, and thought that...
They thought she died.
They thought that she died. So yeah, snuck into a convent to have sex with a nun, basically.
Well, a nun that she was already having sex with before.
Right, of course. True. At one point, she was at a ball in Paris and was really getting along quite well with all the young women, dressed as a man, if it is to be believed, again. And all of the other young men came up to her and were kind of like, hey, you're ruining this for all of us because all the women just want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. So she challenged all three of them to go out into the courtyard and have a duel.
She reminds me of the Fighting Irish guy from Family Guy. She's like, you want to fight about it?
She's like the Incredible Hulk.
She really is.
She's like, listen.
You got a problem? You want to go outside?
Solve it with our swords. So she goes outside with these three young men. All three of them attack her at once with swords. She beats them all.
Of course she does.
Obviously. So then the king has kind of declared no fighting in the palace, but he decides to look the other way. She's broken several French laws, including becoming very notorious for having affairs with women and was even on trial for that for a while to be hanged, but sort of got out of it because the king apparently just liked her impudence. I'm doing air quotes. Just enjoyed the fact of this brazen young woman running all over the country, skewering people. She dueled with someone at a tavern, and I honestly forget why that duel started. I think he was being a douche again. Stabbed him through the stomach, basically killed him, and then she decided she felt bad about it. So the next day she goes to see him in his room, room, and started having an affair with him. Because only a true badass bitch can literally stab you through the guts and then have sex with you.
You know what? Sometimes you just gotta let bygones be bygones.
Right?
Was he cute?
I suppose. And she, by all accounts, was gorgeous. Blue eyes and dark, curly raven hair. So that is Julie Daubigny, the most badass bitch in 16th century France that even the king just decided, you know what? Have your day.
That's my favorite part of the whole story.
Isn't it?
Both last week and this week now, there are stories of rulers of countries going, okay, I mean, you do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
You
do you. We're just gonna sit here and enjoy.
The Chinese emperor going, please stop, to Qing Shi.
Right.
And now him going, no, don't stop her. This is funny.
Yeah, that's basically what he said. Oh, you beat three of my squires single-handedly? It's fine.
That's funny. That's real funny. No, don't put her in jail.
Yeah. So I want to see that movie too.
Absolutely.
I don't, unfortunately, have any quotes from Julie because, again, sources are very hard to come by. It's very, her life story is pretty sketchy. So because of that, because it is so sketchy, I want to say one of my favorite quotes from Virginia Woolf, which is, "For most of history, Anonymous was a woman."
I'm thinking of putting that quote, just painting it on my walls.
I think that is brilliant, and I will help you paint it.
I love Virginia Woolf. We should talk about Virginia Woolf.
Okay. Do you have any quotes from Colette
you'd like to share? Because of her 29 books, at least, that she wrote, there are a plethora of quotes her. I really wanted to find one, however, that wasn't from one of her writings. I wanted to find something that she said about life or about her writings or something like that. And so I found one that's kind of near and dear to me since we are currently in the process of doing script revisions and doing...
And writing.
And she said, "Sit down and put down everything that comes into your head, and then you're a writer. But an author is one who can judge his own stuff's worth without pity and destroy most of it."
Oh, so true.
And I read that and I just started weeping a little bit.
Like
silently weeping. Because it is all too often, and I think we've experienced this a lot the last couple months. Some of the best things you just gotta draw an X through.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't work.
My favorite scene and the inspiration scene behind Banging Lainey, which is a screenplay that Max and I are working on writing and producing, is totally gone. It's totally cut. And I do kind of miss it, but I do see that it's better without it.
Yeah, so wise words. Yeah,
indeed.
Wise words.
Speaking of wise words, shall we define a term this week?
We should. We would like to talk about the friend zone and how it's bullshit.
Yep, doesn't exist. It's not a thing. Here's what does exist, or what I hope can exist, an actual friendship, platonic friendship between a man and a woman. Because if we say that we just want to be friends, we do most likely legitimately want to be friends with you and enjoy hanging out with you. But we probably don't want to have sex with you.
Probably. And I have found, and I think where a lot of those stigma comes from with regards to the friend zone is that most instances where the friend zone in quotation marks is talked about, it's when someone says, you know, "I do want to just be friends," because this isn't just a man-woman thing. This is, you know, across the relationship spectrum. It's when you take the moment of, "Listen, I really just want to be friends," as an insult or as a personal slight.
Right.
And you take it further as, "Oh, well, you're a this or you're a that.
I think that's really true. And I think it's the hardest thing in the world to realize. But if that is said to you, it really is about the other person. It really is about them not feeling something that you may or may not be feeling.
Absolutely.
And so honestly, they're doing you a favor. I will say though that the friend zone doesn't exist, but it's also not something to be taken advantage of. If you know that someone likes you, you should not then start calling and asking them for favors.
Don't string them along.
Yeah, that's not cool. Honesty in all cases.
Absolutely. It's 2015. If you're
16.
Dang, that's true. It's 2016. If you're still talking about the friend zone, grow up.
Get over it. It's not real.
All right. Moving on to today in herstory.
We got some cool stuff this week.
We got some real cool stuff.
Especially because this is a leap year and we found something cool that happened on a leap year
day. So on February 29th, 1940, Hattie McDaniel becomes the first African-American to win an Academy Award. How fitting is it that that happened on a leap year?
Oh, it's great.
How fitting is it that the first time an African-American person wins an Oscar, it is on a day that only happens once every 4 years. Literally once in a blue moon.
It is beautiful. We also found on March 3rd, 1913, women suffrage supporters marched on Washington, D.C. They disrupted the inauguration of President Woodrow Wilson. Onlookers attacked them, and the police just watched it happen.
They did nothing.
Which, unfortunately, is extremely relevant today. In
it's
all
way
cases.
Too real. Right,
in
exactly.
All cases. Equality in all cases.
And finally, on March 4th, 1933, Frances Perkins is confirmed as the Secretary of Labor and becomes the first woman to serve in the President's cabinet.
That's FDR's cabinet, correct?
That is FDR, the man who saved this country.
Gotta love that FDR.
So this week, we would love to give a shout out to our first rater / commenter on iTunes, Miss Rose Spector.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you so much. I know you listen. We are very grateful. If you'd like to keep in contact with us, please do. We are at facebook.com/umpboh.
We are also on patreon.com/UrsulaMajor. That is a tongue twister. Patreon.com/UrsulaMajor.
Yeah.
If you are loving the stories that we are telling and you think it's important for people to know about these incredible women, you can show your support financially and help us bring these stories to people all over the world.
Exactly.
Woo-woo.
How exciting is that?
Global.
Please subscribe to our channel on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic. Leave us comments letting us know what you think. And most of all, tell your friends about us. Spread the word about the Bitchery of History.
The Bitchery of History is a production of UrsulaMajor Productions.
And as always,
bitches get stuff done.